Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
This is an announcement to all United States vehicle owners who own a 2003 or newer vehicle with a manufacturer's warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all. With a struggling economy and the cost of living on the rise, Endurance is now offering an affordable, low-cost vehicle coverage plan to the general public. As of today, you could be one of millions of drivers that now may qualify to have your vehicle protected under this coverage and have all future covered auto repairs paid directly to the repair shop for you. You pick your plan, you pick your deductible, you even pick the repair shop. Roadside service, towing, and rental coverage is included. To all United States vehicle owners who own a 2003 or newer vehicle with a manufacturer's warranty about to expire, get your vehicle protected now and save your wallet from costly vehicle repairs. For your free 5-minute quote and to see if you qualify, visit endurancewarranty.com. Endurancewarranty.com.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we're into brand six of A Storm of Swords. And we actually had an episode that didn't get to go up last week because we had some technical difficulties. But it sounds like from the depths of hell, Matt has been able to rescue last week's episode, which I had a lot of fun talking about, even though
I did too. And we just had some more technical difficulties because I typed in brand six instead of brand four. So I mixed the numbers around. We're leaving it. Jeez. Yes. No, but I do. Sometimes I just make mistakes like I did there. So we actually had some people reach out like, hey, you guys been on a long hiatus? Yeah. This whole month's been weird, to be honest, because like
month
we were pretty much
year? How about year?
yeah, that too. But we recorded so Jimmy needed a week off. I needed a week off. Mm-hmm. And so we recorded an episode, split it into two parts. It was when there's like some news, and then we did the chapter, which was the John chapter. So then we were actually, for you guys listening, only going to have 1 week off. And so then last week we recorded, and then some sort of global Google Cloud issue happened that like jacked up the episode. And we couldn't download it. I couldn't pause it, couldn't end it. So Jimmy stayed in, left it recording. It's like a 5-hour recording now.
It's so long.
It's so ridiculous. And it's like, we only needed like 40 minutes of it. The first like 40 minutes of it. And it's literally just Jimmy's room. Like you just look at it and you just left your camera on.
Looks like a found footage horror movie.
Oh, yeah. It's so ridiculous. So anyway, I ended up coming back in. I kept checking because it wouldn't even let us in. It was recording on your end, but it wouldn't even let me in. And so then ultimately I finally got in. I saw Jimmy's room. It's just lights are off. Nothing's going on. Cobwebs. I mean, you know.
Thank God I didn't come back in like pantsless, you know.
Right. Maybe I would have edited that in there. But anyway, so then I was able to stop it and I couldn't download it. And I was like, well, all right, whatever. And so I almost deleted it because it's like with our program, you only get so many hours. But so I was like, whatever, I'll just check again. So then I had to go on vacation this weekend and I went to San Diego, went to LA. It was fine. Pfft, nothing. Didn't see, you know.
Oh, you mean it's not the end of the world?
No, LA was not burning down. I mean, it was burning. My head was burning from sunburn. That's why I'm wearing an orange shirt right now, because my head is like bright orange as well. Or bright red, I guess. And anyway, I clicked in to set this episode up, and I clicked download and it worked. So now we're gonna post. So it's all freaking all over the place.
We're gonna be two weeks late on the news because it's about like a George blog post.
I felt bad because I was like, well, dang, I want to do something about talk about this at least a little bit. So I recorded like an 8-minute Patreon episode of me just like reading it and going out. So I'm posting that. So I'm just posting all of it. Is what it is, and we're just moving forward.
We're getting back on track. We're getting back on track here.
Yeah, we're getting back on track. So man, a little bit of news, because there's some more news now about that, and then we'll dive right into the chapter here.
Summer's always hot with this stuff, huh?
It's crazy. It's wild. So we talked about this in our news episode, and now there's more news about it. And hey, HBO and Warner Brothers and everything, they're splitting into two companies, something they've talked about, which is crazy, because before it was Warner Brothers and Discovery, and they were two companies, and now they're merging. Became Warner Brothers Discovery. Now they're splitting back up, and essentially, like, now they're splitting, like, all the streaming stuff is going in one way, along with like the movie studios and all the TV stuff. But now the big rumor, and I think this is incredibly likely, and I would say this is actually the best out of all of the crap and stuff that's happened this is by far the best possible outcome. I know I said when Discovery was buying them, I thought it'd be good in the long run. I think it is turning that way. It's just taken a long time to kind of get there. But Sony is apparently going to buy Warner Brothers streaming site, HBO and all that stuff, specifically because they just want the gaming content, because they want Mortal Kombat, Game of Thrones, Harry Potter, DC in their, you know, head-to-head war with Microsoft. He would no longer be the CEO. He would be gone. I actually bet he'd probably be gone.
Let's go, dude.
And then Sony would handle it, which means we would be at least nothing else be guaranteed to get great video game content.
Can I throw out just a crazy theory? Not really a theory, but like, what if?
Yeah.
So obviously the Wheel of Time got canceled, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of people want it back. There are people flying planes over Hollywood saying, bring back Wheel of Time. And there's a petition with like 200,000 signatures to bring it back. Sony buys HBO.
No.
You don't think?
I know.
Wheel of Time could come to HBO?
Oh, okay. Wheel of Time could come to HBO.
No, that's what I'm saying. What if it's a Sony show? It was on Prime, but it's a Sony show.
Yeah, but I think my guess is that's probably some sort of
it's
an Amazon. I think Amazon is also like part of that.
Well, they're done with it, so they can shop it around. I mean, this isn't going to happen, but I was just like, oh, that's kind of interesting.
I don't think so. I thought you were going to say Rafe Judkins is going to direct a freaking Game of Thrones show.
No, we're good on that.
God. We're good. I mean, he wrote Uncharted, though, and I kind of liked it. It went in a weird.
I heard that Judkins episodes in Wheel of Time season 3 were really good. So
That's what I've heard too. I mean, to be fair, I did like the Uncharted movie. And I think for a movie standpoint, they kind of like blended Uncharted. They kind of blended Uncharted 3 with Uncharted 4, which is like Uncharted 3 is a lot of prequel stuff. Yeah. And Uncharted 4 is like the end of the story, and they kind of like blended some of those aspects together just a little bit, kind of pulled from it. And I think ultimately I thought it kind of worked. I think for a movie that was a pretty good way to do it, especially with Tom Holland being Nathan Drake, the character. So yeah, I mean, I think the other thing is if Sony is now buying this, then I think you'll definitely see some. I think we'll see a lot more Game of Thrones movies, and certainly Game of Thrones games.
Yeah, the games part, you know, that's big. And we just talked about in the last episode that we were able to save. We talked about like the new Game of Thrones game. So like between King's Road and this, like, you know,
I mean, give it to freaking, Sucker Punch who did Infamous and then is now doing Ghost of Tsushima?
I believe so.
Yeah. Give them Game of Thrones, not some freaking rando, you know, mobile game studio that made Game of Thrones King's Road game. Give it to Naughty Dog.
I was about to say Naughty Dog would be something.
Yeah, I mean, give them Game of Thrones. I mean, heck, they wrote The Last of Us, and look how well it did. I think The Last of Us did as well as it possibly could. Yeah. You know, season one was phenomenal, and season two is mixed because also the games, it's just the story. The story is also mixed, right? Yeah, the story of The Last of Us 2. Yeah, people seem to love it or hate it.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
Yeah, but the story of The Last of Us 2 is also, like, controversial. So the season was then controversial. It wasn't like HBO messed it up or anything. They did it. Yeah, so...
Well, ironically, you know, also one of the things is, like, show can be polarizing as long as people are watching. Like, HBO does not care if you didn't like it. You know what I'm saying? It's like, so for instance, like on YouTube, when people give you a thumbs down, they think you're hurting you. Actually, it's helping you because YouTube's like, oh, people have an opinion about this. Negative or positive doesn't matter as long as they engage. And I guarantee you, you know, these studios that do these shows that end up being polarizing, as long as people continue to watch, it's all they care about.
Right. You know, the real weird thing, and we don't have to go into this, but if Sony buys this portion of Warner Brothers, they would own the intellectual property rights to essentially all of DC, as well as like game and film rights of Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's weird.
They could do a crossover with, and there's really nothing Disney could say about it.
As long as none of it shows up in Game of Thrones, that's all I care about. I just don't.
Well, maybe Spider-Man could.
Oh, God. George is a huge fan of Stan Lee, to be fair.
Just have a Spider-Man crossover. Well, Spider-Man could show up in Mortal Kombat.
Now that could be.
Well, cool. The Game of Thrones character. Well, that could happen anyway. Why did they do that? Why isn't the Night King in Mortal Kombat anyway? They already own it. That's actually a great point. That's a no-brainer. Yeah.
Good point.
Why don't they just make a Game of Thrones Mortal Kombat game?
They ought to put you in charge, Matt.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, you're already a shareholder.
Well, I'll really be a shareholder if Sony acquires them.
Are you big into Sony?
All three. Well, yeah, but video game stocks is really kind of what I like. That's what I follow and trade. I don't trade the most. I just invest the most. But yeah. Microsoft, I'm there just because it's Microsoft. I don't really care that much about Xbox.
Fair. Neither do they.
Really? Yeah. They're giving up on it. Anyway, that's most of the news. Did you have anything, Jimmy, you wanted to say before?
No, I've been a little bit unplugged just with life and stuff. So whatever you were like, there's new news. I was thinking, oh my God, I don't know what to expect what you're about to say right now. But I did. You texted me about Sony buying, but I didn't look into it. So, I mean, hey, I'll be honest with you. I'm a Zaslav hater. If he's gone, I'm happy. Like, yeah. I don't care. It's fine. And it's not like Sony's a garbage entertainment company. Like, I'm sure there's bad, but like they're competent enough. So
yeah, I mean they honestly seem just like Warner Brothers. They're hit or miss.
Yeah, like everything, right? Like nothing's ever going to be 100%, but as long as like HBO can continue to be HBO, that's all that matters.
Okay, well, here we go. This is actually kind of a bigger chapter here. This is so Bran 4. Let me change that here in the doc. This is why I should stop using Roman numerals. I should just Americanize it. Anyway, so this is Bran 4. Reaching the Night Fort, Bran recalls the horror tales he's heard about the castle, such as the stories of the Rat Cook, Mad Axe, and the Night's King. Before it was abandoned by the Watch some 200 years ago, the Night Fort had once been the greatest castle along the wall. However, Mira and Jojen are unafraid of the ancient castle. They sleep that night in the kitchens near a seemingly bottomless well. Deep in the night, Bran is woken by footsteps coming from the hall. He awakens Mira and then takes control of Hodor's body, as he does when he enters Summer. But it is only Sam and Gilly who emerge from the well. Carrying Gilly's infant son, Gilly asks him if they are the ones Cold Hands was set to find, but Bran has no idea what she is speaking of. Mira asks them how they got past the wall, and Sam reveals that Cold Hands had led them to the Black Gate, which only a brother of the Night's Watch can open. Sam describes Cold Hands as dressed in black like a sworn brother, but his skin and cold from his body remained of a white. But Cold Hands could speak. His eyes did not burn blue, and he and his ravens had saved them from the whites. When the reeds inquire why Cold Hands wasn't with them, Sam tells them that the well was more than just ice and stone. There were ancient spells woven into it, and the wall would not let Cold Hands pass. Jojen tells Sam that Bran is the one Cold Hands seeks. Sam realizes who Bran is, but promises not to tell anyone of Bran's whereabouts on his honor and friendship with Jon. Jojen has Sam bring them to the Black Gate, which is an ancient white weirwood glowing beneath the wall of the Nightfort. The face in the weirwood speaks, and Sam answers by reciting his oath. The weirwood permits them to pass by opening its mouth, and as Bran and the others leave Sam behind, the boy feels a drop of water on him, as salty as a tear. So this is like a massive chapter, and if we get to the point where we have to split this into two, we will do so, which is actually what we did a while back. We did another Bran chapter where we had to split it in two, and actually a lot of people left us comments saying they appreciated that. So we'll see what happens today. We may have to split this into two, but I mean, yeah, this is a huge, huge chapter. You've got a lot of moving pieces here. And I think this is one of the things that we talk about with like the Arya chapters, where it's like, oh, this is actually in a way kind of like you see how information has passed, because you've got like four or five different stories passing through here. Yeah. On this thing, you've got Sam and Gilly coming back. You've got Bran on his route. You've got Cold Hands, and like Cold Hands now going from interacting with Sam to soon being interacting with Bran. And you've also got the Weirwoods and the mystery that's going on there, as well as like the legend of the Night's King and everything. So like a huge chapter to break down.
Yeah, and also this is probably one of the better examples of why the online community loves to do a little bit of a map out whenever they do a reread, and they literally, I've seen people put maps up on the wall and move characters around as they move during the story. And this would be one of those times where maybe before this chapter you would look at where everyone is and be like, man, Sam and Bran are a little close, like they could overlap, and then they do. So I can see why a lot of the online community has been so fascinated with the idea of tracking the geographical movements of the characters. This is a prime example where it probably pays off really well.
Yeah. I 100% agree. Now, look at even in the opening chapter here, right? Or the opening paragraph, I should say. It's only another empty castle, Mira Reed said, as she gazed across the desolation of rubble, ruins, and weeds. No, thought Bran, it's the Nightfort, and this is the end of the world. Which is a really interesting opening line, because as this ends, Bran, you know, he feels the weirwood tear. Now we're talking about meeting Cold Hands. It is almost like Bran is leaving the world of men and entering, like really entering the world of magic. Quite literally through a magical door as he is walking through it. So it's not just the end of the world. It's like the Seven Kingdoms and then moving on to, the lands beyond the wall. It is in a way also a metaphorical end of the world for him, at least as far as being a, you know, not a three-eyed crow, you know, type.
Yeah.
Of
his, you know. It's the next big step in his journey, right? We're seeing a very downtrodden underdog young fantasy protagonist going on a journey, coming of age possibly, and he has now met Cold Hands, who Bloodraven describes as a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And is clearly there to meet Bran and to bring him. Right. Mm-hmm. Do you think Cold Hands is meant to meet anybody other than Bran, by the way? Like, do you think there's more people Cold Hands is being sent out for?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, he meets Sam.
Yeah.
And then Sam goes and meets Bran. I mean, that's one of those like huge mystery questions of we have to go back and read that at the end. I mean, a lot of like certainly Cold Hands movements. But, you know, we've talked about this many times before is, in the event we ever get Winds of Winter and A Dream for Spring, I think we know that Bran is on this journey. So are these little moments that we can go back to and say, this is a moment where Bran influenced something in the past that we could see in at the end of the book? Because Bran could still have a moment like we see in season 8, right? When he's doing whatever the hell he's doing, when the Night King is approaching him in the TV show. Right. Like I thought going into season 8 that there, I was like, maybe we will get some sort of Bran reset something. And I thought the big moment was going to be, you know, when everybody's crazy theorizing in season 8. I think it's episode 1 or 2 of season 8. I think it's 2 where Jon tells them after Daenerys is like, don't tell anybody that we're related. And then Jon immediately tells Sansa and Bran and everything. I thought maybe that would be the moment that we go back to. Like, maybe we get to a moment like we got in episode 3. You know, this is my thought process before seeing it, before everybody in the world saw it. When the Night King is approaching Bran, I was like, oh, maybe Bran will like go back and be like, nope, we got to switch this. Right. Like that's the moment we need to go back in time, because it caused maybe the army to be split or something. You know, I mean, I thought maybe we would get something like that. And I thought
he would do anything.
Yeah, exactly. And then I don't know what the hell he was doing. Right.
He's
and then
doing an Allison impersonation.
I have no clue. I have no clue what he was doing. But that's kind of what I thought. But I still think it's possible that we will see something like that in the books.
I would say so. I mean, obviously there's going to be kind of the hold the door moment. There's going to be other things. I think that the ghost at Winterfell and Theon and the whisperings from the tree, a lot of people have speculated who it is. I mean, I think it's Bran. I think it's Bran influencing him.
It could be.
So I do think that you'll see a little bit more of a impactful moment where Bran is interacting with timelines and things will become more clear. And honestly, this could be one of those moments.
Yeah.
Who knows, is the salty tear Bran's?
Yeah. I mean, that's something we don't, I think.
Oh, think about that, Matt.
When we think about the weirwood trees and everything.
Dude, think about this, right? So if Bran's interacting with the weirwood trees and like future Bran is watching, this is the end of the world, right? That's how this chapter starts. And at the end of the chapter, a tear falls, almost like a salty, like a tear. What if Bran's looking back at this moment, knowing it's the moment of never returning, and that from this moment on, everything, you know, spirals out of control? Because, I mean, remember, his friends, Jojen and Mira, we don't know about Mira, but like Jojen's paced, he's done. So he could be remembering these moments in the future, and that tear strikes him. I think that's probably, so at least in the ballpark of reality for the series. Right.
Well, it should also be noted that it is a salty tear. Then salt and smoke, Azor Ahai. It's one of the things. It's one of the things people point to as a potential for Bran, because he's brought up. And then a lot of it also ties into, you know, this Nisa story, right? Mm-hmm. Nisa's cry means tears, right?
Mm.
And then Bran passes under this thing. You know, I mean, the answer is, they say salt and smoke is literally like the Lightbringer prophecy. But remember, they could be two somewhat different things, right? Like the three dragons and all that stuff doesn't necessarily mean that the three dragons ties into Azor Ahai, right?
It could also be wrong.
It could be. Yeah, but sometimes, you know, it's like when you're looking at these theories and everything, those are like connected, but it doesn't necessarily mean they are.
Yeah, they don't have to be. And also, we have to leave room for the prophecies to be misinterpreted over the years and passed down. Like, everything we're told is not always true. So there's that to play with. Here's a question for you. Why do you think Jojen and Mira were not afraid of the castle? Like, Bran obviously sees this as a huge deal, but is that a testament to how weird Jojen and Mira's life is?
I mean, it could just be something as simple as they're just so focused on their mission.
Okay. And Bran's a little more aware then.
But at the same time, I mean, that goes into like Howland Reed stuff, where he has all this Chronogmin magic, and is this not surprising to them? Like, I mean, if you grow up around, you know, I mean, like, it's not weird for people. Like, you see,
that's what I'm saying. Like, they've seen some crazy shit,
right? Like even look at the show, like the scene in the show where they go and grab the white and they take it to Cersei. Like, the look Cersei gives.
Tired of trying diet after diet without results? Mochi Health offers a long-term weight loss solution personalized to your needs. Our board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians provide expert guidance to help you succeed. Eligible patients can access custom formulated GLP-1 medication at an affordable set price delivered monthly. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 for $40 off your first month. That's joinmochi.com.
Everyone else gives it compared to like John and the people who captured it, who are like used to seeing these things.
Yeah,
totally different, right? I mean, like, you know, as they're all seeing it. Or anytime you see the dragon and people are like, oh my God, because they've never seen it. But, you know, right. Daenerys sees them all the time. So,
yeah. It's like Jim Cornette talking about if you walk out of your front door and see an elephant humping a giraffe, the first day you see, you're like, oh, and then by this day seven, you're like, would someone tell them to move? I need to get out of my driveway.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a lot of lore dumping in here.
And
So even in this, man, this is just the first few chapters here. So Bran wasn't so certain. The Night Court had figured in some of old Dan's scariest stories. And here it was that the Night's King had reigned before his name was wiped from the memory of man. This is where the rat cook had served the Andal King, his prince and bacon pie, where the 79 sentinels stood their watch, where brave young Danny Flint had been raped and murdered. This was the castle where King Sherritt had called down his curse on the Andals of old, where the prentice boys had faced the thing that came in the night, where the blind Simon Star Eyes had seen the hellhounds fighting. Mad Axe had once walked through these yards and climbed these towers, butchering his brothers in the dark. All that happened hundreds of and thousands of years ago, to be sure. And some maybe never happened at all. Maester Luwin always said that old Nan's stories shouldn't be swallowed whole. But once his uncle came to see his father and Bran asked about the Night Fort, Benjen Stark never said the tales were true, but he said, he never said they weren't. He only shrugged and said, we left the Night Fort 200 years ago, as if that was an answer. Now, we're also bringing up Benjen here, and then we will bring up Cold Hands, and we're talking about like the stories and are they true? Are they not? Right. Mm-hmm. Which maybe Benjen's story will never get an answer. Maybe is Benjen Cold Hands, which, you know, George has said nothing. He's not, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we will ever get the answer to that story.
Yeah, that's true. So we talked a lot about Cold Hands whenever he ends up meeting Sam, and we made that short and put it out on social media where I was like, I'm saying it now, Dunk the Tall is Cold Hands. And a lot of people are like, how would that even be possible? And I'm like, well, I said it in the short if you had listened. But secondly, I know it's improbable. I know it's probably not true. What I really think, like, if I'm not just having fun talking to my friend about A Song of Ice and Fire, like, I don't think we'll ever know who Cold Hands is. I don't think that's a question that needs an answer in a series that has a lot of questions that need to be answered in two books. I don't think Cold Hands' origin will ever be revealed. And I actually do not believe we'll ever see Benjen Stark again. Personally, I don't think so.
Yeah. And those two things don't necessarily have to be connected.
Right? Oh, and like, I don't think they are.
We could find, like maybe we find remnants of Benjen, like we find like his like there's like specifically someone is like, this was Benjen's sword, like with his cloak and you know, some other things, which that would also mean maybe he's not Cold Hands, because Cold Hands is wearing all of that stuff, but maybe he's wearing a different set. I don't know, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be. But I mean, or maybe you find like somebody else's body and you find like a sword that's like, this is specifically Benjen's sword, or this is his horse, or any, you know, any artifact that specifically ties it to Benjen. So like, we could perhaps find out that Benjen died, or his or he leaves a note, or any of that stuff. So like, we could get closure on him without it necessarily also telling us yes or no, he is or is not Cold Hands in the story.
In the story, regardless
of what George has said outside of the story.
Yeah, obviously we have confirmation from George's notes to his editor that Benjen is not Cold Hands, but you're right in the context.
But it doesn't.
You're free to think that.
But it also, but that note still does also not change the fact that like Benjen could now be Cold Hands. Like he doesn't, you know what I mean? It's one of those things where it's like, if Bran is now, he's no longer Bran, he's the three-eyed crow. Oh,
I feel like with his editor, he would have been like, I don't think he would have kayfabed her. I think he would have.
Right. Which is the pushback on that. But, okay. So some other things that, that were brought up here, I want to bring this up to a little bit. Danny Flint. She's actually kind of a pretty interesting.
Danny, sport. You say?
Danny Flint, and she comes back up a couple times, but essentially she was this girl from House Flint. She dresses up as a boy to become a member of the Night's Watch. Long. And there's a and there's a story, there's a song about her that is said, and it's a sad and pretty song. You know, this girl dresses up as a boy to become the Night's Watch, ends up being raped and murdered by the Black Brothers. In some versions of the song, her ghost still walks the night for, and it's brought back up again in A Dance with Dragons, in which Wyman Manderly asks Abel to sing it at the wedding of Ramsay Bolton to Arya Stark, right? The fake Arya. So it is kind of, it is brought up again. But and then later John asks Mance Rayder if he's familiar with the song, but I mean, it does pop up a few times, and some people have even gone to say, like, well, maybe she's the inspiration for Nisa, and try to blend some of these stories together.
Yeah, that's a pretty grim, like, I know we talk about how dark Song of Ice and Fire can be. That's one of the darker tales, I think. I think of Ramsay's mom. And then I also think of this as like two of the darker pieces of lore that we get in A Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll bring this up because I know we have a YouTube video on it. I think it was back like as and I did a, or maybe you and I did, I can't remember. I know we have one on YouTube, and we talked about it previous where we did like a dedicated episode to this whole theory. But I do want to dive into her story a little bit here because I have a Reddit post saved where somebody talked about it. So they're saying Dany Flynt is amongst the category of legendary figures of the North who the singer and song tales are about. Like, you know, she's in the same category as Simon Star-Eyes, the Night King, Mad Axe. Curiously, of the same legendary figures of the North that also revolve around the Nightfort, you know, which is the Rat's King, all those people we've mentioned earlier. But hers is, you know, pretty scary, right? So some people are saying that actually what's kind of interesting is that it's it's kind of similar. They're making comparisons to her story and Lyanna Stark, right? Because Lyanna Stark perhaps dresses up as a boy like the Knight of the Laughing Tree. So Bran brings up Dany Flynt, and later in a vision confuses himself and Arya for Benjen and Lyanna. Wyman brings up Dany Flynt at a wedding of Ramsay and Jane Poole, pretending to be Arya. Who Ned Stark often compares to his sister Lyanna. Jon Snow brings up Dany Flynt while catching two wildling girls pretending to be boys, and well, you know the whole story about Jon Snow and his relation to Lyanna Stark. Every time Dany Flynt is brought up, we're made to be reminded in some aspect to Lyanna Stark and the story of the Knight of the Laughing Tree. It's all but spelled out for us that Lyanna was probably the said Knight. And I can read this. Storm of Swords, Bran 2. This goes back to when we did another split episode with Bran because it was so big. We had to split up like all the stuff with what was actually happening. Then they go into the full Knight of the Laughing Tree story.
Yeah.
Whoever he was, the old gods gave strength to his arm. The Porcupine Knight fell first, then the Pitchfork Knight, you know, it goes on. You know, and then folks cheered lustily for the Knight of the Laughing Tree as the new champion was called when his fallen foes sought to ransom horse and armor. The Knight of the Laughing Tree spoke in a booming voice through his helm, right? And then, you know, they talk about teacher squire's honor, that they should be ransom enough. And so the little chronicman prayer was answered by the green men or the gods or the children of the forest, who can say? So that theory, we don't have to go into all that, but it suggests that Cold Hands could actually be Dany Flynt, because we don't know anything about this character other than the fact that...
I like that. That's wild.
Yeah, so that's one I would love to come back to because it's like it's a really big theory. But it is a member of the Night's Watch who is like raped and, you know, murdered. I've also seen some theories where people say that perhaps after she's raped and murdered, they like give her to the Weirwood Tree.
So
and like. Because remember, sometimes I talk about like there's like stories of people who like to feed the Weirwood Trees people, or maybe right. They eat people, which is why they cry blood and all of those things. Or maybe she is part of the Weirwood Tree or something, and she's the one crying. I mean, it's pretty crazy. And that we haven't even got into like the Night King connections. That's why this is probably going to have to be a two-part episode.
So here's another thing. We know that Liana's story can't, like, in the actual Song of Ice Fire books, is that she was taken and raped by Rhaegar, right?
Exactly. There's a connection.
But it wasn't true.
Yeah.
At least that's a speculation. We believe that that is not the case, right? Is there a chance that Danny Flynn's story is also incorrect?
It could be. Because they even say here, Bran says, well, one, old Nan's stories might not be true. And then he questions Benjen about it. And Benjen says, they may not be. They might not be.
So maybe we end up learning more about Danny Flynn's story. I don't know exactly how. This whole idea that Danny Flynn is Cold Hands, though, I really like. That's kind of
right. And maybe George introduced the idea, this character Cold Hands, who we've seen before. And then he's come up with this character, Danny Flynn, because she doesn't begin to start showing up until like now.
Right. Right.
However, she could be when you think about a girl entering the Night's Watch, right? Like Arya comes to mind. However, there is another girl that also looks kind of like a man, especially in the book, that is also super tall and super athletic and is also, and it may be Danny Flynn is more like Brienne of Tarth than Arya.
But what if Cold Hands is Brienne from the future? No, I'm just kidding.
I guess I'm just saying, so we already have there's another characteristic because we've talked about the possibility of it being Sir Dunk the Tall, because we're thinking this big, huge guy, which is how Cold Hands is described.
Yeah, and like a misconception that instead of frostbitten, the hands are burned from a summer hall and whatever.
Correct. I mean, yeah, certainly. But Danny Flynn might not be this like young, attractive woman. I mean, she dresses up as a boy. Maybe she is more like a Brienne of Tarth, a big, strong woman that has some boyish features.
Yeah.
And that's why she joins the Night's Watch, because Brienne is very similar. Yeah. She wants to be a knight because she's big and strong. I mean, it's kind of really the opposite of Arya, where, I mean, Arya's a little bit tomboyish, but she's short and young. And, you know, I mean, she wants to do it just because she trends more that way. Whereas Bran, what else is she going to do?
I mean, is there a chance that also, like, you know, thinking about Danny Flynn, and I need to look way more into this, by the way, because this is fun. I hadn't really thought about this. So
yeah, it's a really small character who only shows up a few times, but every time she shows up, there are, you know, a lot of connections to like Lyanna.
Right. So two things here. What if Danny Flynn was pulled north to the wall by Bloodraven, just like Bran and Jojen and all and Euron, right? That could absolutely be the case.
But she's real quick. I think her story is like hundreds of years ago.
Right. But like the three-eyed crow.
Right. It could be throughout history.
Yeah. Like whoever the three-eyed crow, it doesn't have to be Bloodraven. I'm just saying like the three-eyed crow, whatever this thing is, this entity that relives itself.
Or perhaps a brand that exists in all these.
That's what I'm saying. Like, we don't know where the boundaries are and when is who doing what, whatever. Right. So I was thinking about that, but also who's to say that maybe Danny Flynn did not actually end up killing these brothers that were trying to harm her. And it is so embarrassing for the Watch, because remember, they used to actually be kind of a prestigious thing. Like, you know, a lady came up here, duped us, and then defended herself and killed a bunch of us. Like, what if they changed the story to make her seem like weaker? You see what I'm saying? Like,
right. Like she's the victim and not the other way around.
Right, right. Like, what if that's the case? I mean, there's so many things that we could run, you know, in circles about, but just I just like to put ourselves and whoever's listening to this and rereading with us, like, in the mindset of just like questioning pretty much everything we're told, because it is definitely George's intent, I think, to play with preconceived notions or like legends over time.
Yeah. I will say, because she's only brought up in three chapters, but each of the chapters in which she is brought up, it has to deal, it deals directly with somebody whose like identity is in crisis, right? Mm. So she's brought up in the Dance of Dragons, chapter 37, Prince of Winterfell, which is the Ramsay marrying Arya Stark, which is actually Jane Poole.
Right.
Right. And then also this chapter, this Bran chapter, in which you're already starting with like Bran is now on the verge of shifting between man and legend, essentially, as he's quite literally passing through a magic door into perhaps a magical kingdom, essentially, right? a new realm, exactly, quite literally a new realm. And then the other one is a John chapter, which I'll have to look up exactly what's going on there. But again, it is also brought up with like Liana and those connections as well. Yeah, the John chapter, let's see, chapter 58. Tormund Giantsbane, along with three thousand wildlings, passed the wall at Castle Black. So it is another one in which you are going through the wall. Right, this time it's going the opposite direction.
Man, Danny Flint might be a really untapped resource for theories for myself.
Yeah. It's not a lot, but it's there, and it's one of those like, oh, you really kind of got to dive into it.
Yeah.
So then there's other characters too, right? You talk about, the Night's King, he is mentioned here as well. And, what are the connections there? And I think we even get to some weird, there's some crazy Hodor stuff, right? So again, yeah, this might be a two-part episode here, but we'll continue on. Just, we have a few more minutes here. We'll continue on. So another line, just like two paragraphs down, Bran had told, there was no way through. Bran had told them there wouldn't be. He had told them, but Jojen Reed had insisted on seeing for himself. He had a green dream, he said, and his green dreams did not lie. They don't open gates either, thought Bran. The gate the Nightfort guarded had been sealed since the day the Black Brothers had loaded up their mules and garrisons and departed for Deep Lake. Its iron portcullis lowered, the chains that raised and carried it off. The tunnel packed with stone and rubble, all frozen together until they were impenetrable as the wall itself. We should have followed John, Bran said when he saw it. He thought of his bastard brother often, since the night that Summer had watched him ride off through the castle through the storm. We should have found the King's Road and gone to Castle Black. So it also raises the question, I think this is something else that should really be explored. Did the Night's Watch really leave the Night's Fort because they couldn't man it anymore? Because that was supposed to be 200 years ago. Or did they leave it because of other things? Like they viewed it as haunted, or they viewed it even when we hear about the Night's Watch, so 200 years ago would be like 100 AC, right? Because we're 300 AC now ish,
so I believe
so 200 would be 100 AC, which I believe is still in the reign of King Jaehaerys, right?
Yes, maybe.
Yeah, because I think House of the Dragon's like 150. Is that right?
Wait, I'd have to do some timeline math.
But I mean, it certainly feels like the Night's Watch is still at pretty good strength
at that point. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Because even when Jaehaerys goes there, let me look it up. I'll pull it up here. But even when Jaehaerys and Queen Alicent goes there, seems like it's pretty strong. And then even when Bloodraven goes, it feels like it's really deteriorated a lot since Bloodraven's been there in the last 50 years. Now it feels like, we're like in deep trouble. But like because of the Mad King and Robert, right? I mean, that seems like it's where it's really kind of declined. But I would imagine that they would still be able to hold their strongest position.
You would imagine so. I love the idea that they were driven out by something else.
Right. Because, I mean, if this is like ghost of the Night's King, or they say that her ghost might be there.
Yeah, very possible.
So let's,
maybe Cold Hands came by and said, hey, you guys got to go.
Yeah, so Alison Targaryen goes there. She goes to the Night's Watch in 58 AC.
Okay.
She convinced the Lord Commander that the Night Fort, which she found unpleasant, she says it should be abandoned in 58 AC. And then the new castle, Deep Lake, 7 miles to the east, was paid for by the Queen's jewels. The Night Fort was abandoned during the construction of Deep Lake. Oh, okay, so she's actually the one that says you should leave. So maybe I guess
she just figured it was fine.
I guess. I don't know. Her dragon couldn't even fly over the wall.
Yeah. Would she have known something that we don't know?
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Well, that might be an okay place to stop. And then we can come back and do
Night's King stuff.
Night's King stuff and the rest of this. Because this needs to be a two-part episode, and I don't want to shortchange anything here.
Yeah, I agree. I think brand chapters are so much fun.
I mean, it seems like every brand chapter now might almost have to be the two parts. Because, I mean, one, this is like, even in the audiobook sped up for me, it was over an hour.
And, oh, yeah, it's long.
It's a long chapter. And two, I don't want to shortchange anything. But, I mean, that Danny Flint stuff is all super important.
And yeah,
I don't want to shortchange any of that.
Yeah, I'll look more into that. And I might have more opinions or thoughts about it when we come back.
Yeah, because we still have Skagos to talk about. I mean, this is a big one. This is a big one. So
very big.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that's a good place for that. So, and actually, the way we're recording this, we're kind of 1 week ahead because of the, now I have that other episode to post.
Beautiful.
Our timeline's still all jacked up. So hopefully I can hit end recording here and it actually works. So yeah. So I think we will do that. So next week, we will come back and we will continue this chapter and do a part two.
Absolutely. And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
We'll see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.